Hey everybody, Dr. Tom Moorcroft back with you again, and I'm your co-host for this episode of Reversing Mast Cell Activation Syndrome and Histamine Intolerance Summit. And today, this is a really awesome opportunity for all of us. I'm getting to hang out with my buddy Nick, the EMF guy, Pino. He is a guy that I've met a long time ago, and he was one of the first people that I really met who sat down and understood that EMFs were more than just like this buzzword and that there's something that we had to look into for our health. And right after we first met, he actually published the number one best-selling book, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs. And he's been an advocate for safe technologies for well beyond the time we've known each other. He has an unconventional approach, which you're gonna really see come out today. He's got a lot of humor, but he blends that with a lot of science and common sense. So I'm really looking forward to having this discussion because he really is the leading voice in the topic of electromagnetic pollution and how it affects our health. So Nick, thanks so much for joining us and really appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really humbled. You know, I don't know if I'm the leading voice, but I must say I'm happy to be one of them. And for sure, scientists that are in this field, advocates, activists, some of them have been doing that for 30 years. So, I mean, I stand on the shoulder of giants and I'm trying to do my part. Unfortunately, I have bad news for everyone on this presentation, and it's since we met in person in 2017, and I did that presentation in front of almost 300 doctors and health experts and really talked about 5G. Well, things have gotten worse, and I guess it's a bit bizarre. And in my scope of work, when I discover that things are getting worse, in some sense, I get excited because I want to report the news. So it's kind of twisted in a sense. But since my book was published, I wish I was able to just rewrite it because experts from different fields now are confirming these health effects from EMFs. And one of these fields is in mast cell activation, which we'll dive into today. And I was very surprised about that link.
Yeah, it's so interesting, you know, and here you say that it's like it's kind of unfortunate because it's all coming and it's here, right? And it's more and more all the time. And I think that one of the pieces that I've always liked about your approach and why I think that like definitely like, you know, you're the leader of the field, not only because you're talking about it and putting it in words that we can all understand, but it's that it's like stuff we can actually do. You know? Because I mean, it's great important to not have 5G, right? It'd be great to not have Wi-Fi, but we got it. So, you know, What are the things that are out there? I mean, what are we commonly exposed to that might be kind of negatively impacting our health that we might not even think about that just become part of daily life these days?
Yeah, well, it's mostly, I think the most concerning exposures when it comes to EMFs, electromagnetic fields, is the cell phones, Bluetooth gizmos that we have in our ear, for example, the earbuds. Unfortunately, a lot of people, even some of them will be listening to this interview, will say, oh my God, oh, what am I doing? Well, don't panic. I mean, if you're just learning about this, you didn't know better. So maybe at the end of this presentation, you'll decide other ways and to go with wired solutions, for example. But the reality is that any EMF emitting device that connects wirelessly to your phone or to a tower, in the case of a cell phone, emits EMFs. And when it's close to your body, we're talking about the worst risks, especially when it comes to brain cancer. So that's really why I'm not comfortable recommending anything that emits EMF that is in this area of the head. And we know that, for example, it's linked with an increase. Some researchers say there's been a doubling in glioblastomas in the UK in the last two or three decades. Some researchers think it's linked to cell phone, especially since the research is very, very strongly shows a link between cell phone use and the increase in ipsilateral cancers. So it means you talk on the right side, you have a cancer or tumor on the right side, which is even more causation or strongly causative as far as an effect goes. And, you know, more and more lawsuits now are fortunately being won by users who want money as a compensation for a brain tumor. There's over 50 lawsuits in the Washington circuit at the moment when it comes to brain tumors and cell phones. And that's just one country. So all around the world, I don't even know if there's an attorney who could tell me that. I'd argue it's probably in the hundreds of different lawsuits now from users that have a brain tumor or tumor of the head. It could be a parotid gland tumor, thyroid, acoustic neuroma, which is is a non-carcinogenic tumor, but that can lead to complications, including deafness or death. There's probably other tumors I'm not even aware of that are more rare, but the reality is if you have a device very close to your body, you're asking for trouble. And that's also the phone in the pocket that I'm not comfortable with. And that's so common. So people say, oh no, Nick, I'm not using it near the head. But if you just leave it in your pocket, the phone is hot, it's on. So it's always emitting a little signal. And when it's downloading an email or downloading a messenger or text, it's emitting more radiation very close to your genitalia. And whether you're a man or a woman,
doesn't.
Yeah. Well, it's exactly, both sexes will be impacted by this radiation. And again, last year, it was, I think, Pusan University in South Korea published a meta-analysis of everything that has been published. I think it was just the best studies in the last 10 years, and reconfirmed on top of reconfirming the reconfirmation of the reconfirmation, because it looks like 10 years ago, the Cleveland Clinic researchers, and that's not some fringe science institution, it's very mainstream. Even the top researchers there in fertility said, you know, among the top five ways we recommend to preserve your fertility as a man, one of them in a brochure they passed around in 2010, or maybe even before, was do not keep a phone in your pocket. And what is maddening is this is 12 years ago. Where is the policy? If we have among the best scientists in fertility that are at the Cleveland Clinic, so it doesn't make it to policy. And then we have 12 years of men all around the world. I mean, very soon it's going to be nearly every single man on the planet is going to have a phone in their pocket. Even in sub-central Africa, in the middle of nowhere, you have people with phones in their pocket. Now, the flip phone, some people have smartphones. I mean, it's something that people look at righteously as something next to food and shelter. I can have the phone too, and maybe do business on the internet, or, and there's good reasons to have that phone. However, the problem I have with it is how it's constantly emitting. So you just keep the phone somewhere else, in a bag, in a purse is always better if you can create some of that distance, or if you don't need to be on call and you have that, maybe that your job is a little bit more relaxed. You don't need to be on call 24/7. So very good for your sanity, and probably good for if you have mast cell activation syndrome, you need to calm yourself down. So there's that, but just keep it on airplane mode or turn it off altogether, especially in non-office hours where you don't want to be reached. So there's something to be said to just disconnect from technology for your mental sanity and stress levels, and then also the radiation that comes with it. So I would say, you know, I just talked about the cell phone and there are different devices that touch the body, but that's the first category of devices we want to look into if we talk about the health effects of EMFs. And after that, we're going to talk about how it increases mast cell activation syndrome, or how it might be even part of the causation, the different factors that lead to that. So if it's very close to your body, in my mind and in the mind of people who study, let's say, the dosimetry of EMF. So the dosimetry is really the dose you're getting daily. If you use a dosimeter, which is, let's say, a small device, a small sensor that looks at your EMF exposure on a daily basis, what you want to do is to see these numbers go down, your overall cumulative exposure. But what you would realize with such a machine is that if you have devices very close to the body, you have a lot of that radiation being absorbed. If you have that device 10 feet away, that radiation is still there, it's still impacting you to some degree, but it's minute compared to a phone right next to you. So this is really the importance, is distance. But I have to mention maybe other things people have at home that maybe they're fairly close to. For example, a Wi-Fi router would be a big source of exposure. I recall my dad had the problem with his router and kind of realized that it was stressing him because the router was 1 foot from his face as he was working at the computer. He had his monitor, the router, and the tower. And my dad is not a huge on IT necessarily. I don't even know why the router was there. But, you know, just like people put the hard drive on a mount right next to their screen and their desktop tower, the router was there. It's just a wrong placement that when he realized that my dad has been an extreme guy, I think he probably threw the machine away needlessly. He just needed to move it away. But he's kind of like this, oh, this machine is no good. And he probably replaced it with another router now that I think of it. But, you know, the reality is just move these things away. It should not be in your bedroom. It should not be in your closet, very close to your pillow, for example. It should be as far away to your living areas during the day and during the night. And well, during the night anyway, I would recommend everyone listening to this, turn it off tonight. You right. don't need a Wi-Fi signal at night. Certainly your kids do not need it, because maybe it's going to be an incentive to say, oh, if you wake up in the middle of the night, just go on social media. No,
cut that off, right?
Cut that off. So no Wi-Fi at night is just, it should become a family policy, and adults should lead by example where there's a cutoff and the Wi-Fi turns off automatically, maybe using one of these outlet timers that you use at Christmas time. Yeah. So,
and yeah. Nick, one of the things I want to throw in is, and for everybody watching, we're really going to dive into how all this stuff affects mast cells and your health even more.
Yeah.
But I think what Nick just dropped, like one of the most important things, like I've learned over my course of medicine, I tell my patients, so I just wanted to highlight it, is kind of like the Wi-Fi thing. I know a lot of people live in townhouses, apartments, and they're like, well, I can turn mine off, but I can't turn off my neighbors, right? But what Nick was just saying, I love it, man. It's like, it's that distance, right? And the further you are away, the less it impacts you. And so I you know, I always, every once in a while, I go see what new stuff's on your website and everything. And you and I with the outlet timers are critical, guys. So like, it's like, put a timer on, but it's like, when you look, it's like, I tell my patients all the time, when you plug your router in, you turn it off at like 10:30, 11, whatever the time is for your family, you set it and you forget it. You never have to think about it again, right?
Yeah.
And I see like on your website, I'm like, oh, set it and forget it. I'm like, all right, like, keep it simple, guys.
Yes.
And so that's another thing. And Nick, what are you doing with, I mean, so we want to turn off our Wi-Fi at night, certainly during the day. It's like, some of us need it. It's like getting harder and harder for a lot of people to get hardwired homes without great expense. So the turning it off at night lets the nervous system calm down and minimizes. What about what do you do with your phone at night?
Well, yeah, I used to recommend airplane mode. And that's another complication that came in the last several years, kind of getting worse, is our technologies are becoming more and more wireless, you know?
Smart.
Yeah, smart. Exactly. And that's the maddening thing. I was shopping for earbuds. These are just Bose wired earbuds. I love them. They're among my favorite. They have like this noise canceling. I cannot find that same model because Bose at one point, probably 1 or 2 years ago, discontinued those, saying, oh, this is the old stuff, wires, who want those? And now they're 100% Bluetooth. So I was like, no, Bose, what are you doing? I cannot really find headphones. And I had the hardest time even finding headphones that are wired. So just to tell you that it's becoming increasingly difficult. And I can appreciate the fact that a lot of people aren't initially ready to make the jump to wired connections. Now I'm traveling all around the world. I'm recording this from Spain. I don't know if I told you that. I'm in Barcelona, and what I do, and I'm DMF guy, so I guess I could be a little bit more bizarre than your average citizen out there, but I have a long wire. I have an Ethernet cable that I bought 50 feet, and the router is not even in this room. So it goes all the way in the corridor. But for these interviews, what I like about this, and consider this for your home office, stability of signal. Here I'm in an Airbnb. If I were on Wi-Fi recording an interview, or maybe you're doing Zoom for your work now, right? A lot of people since the pandemic are starting to use Zoom for meetings. And if you have choppy signal, it's very annoying. So it's bad for your stress levels. And then it's also very unprofessional. And sometimes the Wi-Fi can be spotty. And what do people do at home when they have spotty Wi-Fi? Oh, they call the company and they say, I want a stronger Wi-Fi. So the thing is, now they ship that stronger Wi-Fi with, I don't know how many antennas, 4, 8, I don't know if it's 12 now. Okay. And now you're just filling every room with even more of that pollution. So maybe consider the cost of just wiring your home office, for example, or maybe that spot in your home where you say Wi-Fi is bad, it's annoying. An IT company can do it fairly quickly and maybe a few hundred dollars, right? But if you have that direct connection to the router, it's settled. And now, especially for, let's say, a workstation, you're in one place, you don't move your desktop computer. And now your computer is always connected with the fastest speed and fastest reliability.
Yep. You know, Nick, it's so cool that you're pointing that out, because I noticed, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, like again, like we were doing a lot more at home, and my home office is pretty far from the router. And what I found was hard is a cable company, it's a router that has a Wi-Fi built into it. And I was on, I had to get on the phone with the tech people with a special login to turn the Wi-Fi off.
Yeah.
But I have like 100-foot Ethernet cable. Well, so then I only turned on the Wi-Fi when I needed it, but I used my own router. So I knew everything about it, but then there, it wasn't enough. So they're like, oh, put a booster on it. I'm like, turn it all off, plug into the back of the router, 100-foot cord. But my office is upstairs. And before we had it hardwired, I ran it under the carpet. You would see the thing dangling. But what's really cool was like what you just pointed out is you actually get better performance and it's better for your health. And the other part that I'm curious about, because I've heard about, is the patchy signal. And because I think this is sort of where it really dovetails into where how it impacts your immune system and your nervous system. But whether it's Bluetooth, whether it's Wi-Fi, your phone and your computer and your routers are always trying to connect. So if it's patchy, my understanding is that they actually try more off, they kind of almost over communicate. Is that accurate?
This is true for the cell phone, especially the router. I'm not aware if routers, I guess some people have routers that are connected to the cellular network these days. I see that more and more where they don't necessarily have cable or DSL or fiber optic, but what they have coming in is a cell phone tower that sends a signal. Then their router is a router that is connected via the 4G or now 5G networks, and this distributes Wi-Fi in their home. So in that case, maybe the machine will adjust itself depending on the signal strength. But the reality is when it comes to a phone, and that's a tricky part of a phone, is a lot of people want to use it and be on the go. So they go in the elevator, they're in the car, and the signal, oh yeah, it always connects. Isn't it fun? I'm in the middle of four walls, a big concrete and steel box, and the signal is still good. Why is that? Well, part of it is that the cell phone increases its power level, its intensity to let's say, try harder to connect to that cell phone tower, right? And in one study, it showed an increase of 10,000-fold in radiation in certain situations. So that's how your phone can ramp up, because your phone tries to minimize its power level to some degree when connectivity is good. And that's just logical. It's just, and don't worry, it's not because the industry really cares about health. They say there's no health effects. It's because they want a lower power consumption to not have the battery drain in 2 hours, right? So anyway, it's just a little comment
kind of interesting, here. Right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, so what I would do is ensure that when you're taking a call on your cell phone, regardless of how you're using it, try to have good connectivity. So it means that if you have spotty connectivity, you're in a tunnel, in a car, in an elevator shaft, or especially in large buildings with a lot of concrete walls and ceilings and floors, you don't get good connection. Go outside on the balcony, and now you have good connection. And in fact, you're going to reduce radiation. So there's just something to note. But yeah, this is the only technology, the smartphone, that I think ramp up the amount of radiation it emits when connectivity is on the low side. Yeah.
If anybody's and anyone who's been on calls with me knows that, like, I'm almost 100% like on speaker, and I don't know how good it is, but it's like I keep it as far away from me as I can, but I realize I need the tool. So, Nick, what I mean, the thing is, like, how do EMFs, I mean, other than direct radiation and leading to cancer, which I think probably a pretty big deal, what are the other known health impacts of EMFs?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, and the question is, okay, well, let's say if I stop using it near the head, am I all good? And the reality is, no, not necessarily.
The bearer of all good news today, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh no, I thought it was sorted out, Nick. I already use speakerphone. No, it's not sufficient. And because, of course, there's a link with fertility if you have it in the pocket. So there's that. But what if you don't use it to the head, you don't use it in the pocket, is it still problematic? It can be. And our overall exposure to EMFs seems to increase our oxidative stress. So quite simply, it's a stressor. And there's a big link with mast cell activation that really shocked me. I discovered that really preparing for this presentation in particular, and that's from Dr. Theo. Yeah, I'll call him that, MD, PhD. And he's among the top 1% of experts on mast cell activation syndrome, one of the top scientists, and we really said in the presentation, and that comes from Beth O'Hara, so I have to give her a shout because I learned that from her. He said, you know, EMF radiation causes mast cell degranulation, and it happens fairly quickly. So, and for people, I learned about mast cell activation a little bit preparing about this because I was not aware of the new research. But the way I understand it is that the mast cell will release histamine and cytokines and a bunch of things, causing this sort of allergic reaction. And he said, pointing out a study in 2019 on rats, that it's been this 2019 study that was in, let me verify, the International Journal of Morphology. And I can send it to you if that's useful for some geeks out there. But basically what they use is a 900 megahertz EMF signal. That's equivalent to a cell phone. And even the 5G phones now go a little bit under that, around 700. And it shows that 1 hour per day of exposure to rats, 2 watts of power, which is pretty much a phone, for 45 days, caused degranulation of the mast cells in the brain of these rats, if I understand correctly. But he said that it happens very quickly, and that's over 45 days. And again, in these studies and my review of the literature, being a non-scientist, I asked other people that are way better than myself to, okay, what do you think about the EMF literature, and what does it prove? What does it not prove? That's really my honest, simple question as a citizen journalist. And one guy in particular, Steve Weller, from an organization that is dedicated to EMF research that's independent, said, well, Nick, there's barely any long-term studies. Most of these rat studies are a few days, 45 days, 60 days, and you'll be hard-pressed to find a lot of studies that are over years. So what are we doing, really thinking that we have safety standards? So the studies are not realistic or do not reflect how we're using technology, because who's going to use a phone for 1 hour per day, 45 days, right? No one. I use it more than 1 hour per day, and I got to be careful of how I use it. I try to use it wired. But I mean, the average user, it's hours per day or hours per day in the pocket. So it's really confirming when you have someone at the top of their field that said EMFs cause fast degranulation of the mast cells, which is and one of the causative agents of maybe that mast cell activation syndrome. And we have a rat study that is the first one of its kind that said, well, 45 days, 1 hour per day exposure. And I'm like, oh my God, but this is one device, right? So we don't know the scope of how much all the devices and the overall cumulative exposure are leading or exacerbating the mast cell activation syndrome we're seeing. But for sure, it needs to be urgently looked at, right? It's just how I see it. But that's not the first time that scientists have talked about that. So I really remember something from a colleague of mine called Professor Holly Johansson, who's an ex-Karolinska Institute scientist. And he's retired, but more active than ever. You know how scientists are. Sometimes they kind of never stop. But what he said two decades ago, he had a paper about that said, we think that electrohypersensitivity has a link with mast cell and histamine. So the mast cells release histamine, and it creates that flushing effect in some people that have electrohypersensitivity. They will talk on a phone and they will get a rash. Yeah. Literally, you have some people that get too close to Wi-Fi router, they get a rash. And now it's hard to say, oh, this is a psychosomatic issue. Oh yeah, I mean the psychosomatic effect is pretty huge because I'm able to change my skin on demand. I mean, it's almost, maybe it can happen. I don't know the entire field of psychology, but it's true that this is happening and that you have histamine release, even in participants who feel nothing. And that's the thing. That's from Holly Johansson's research. So people listening to this that say, oh, that's okay, I don't have mast cell activation syndrome, and maybe I know someone who, or I'm just curious listening to this presentation. It doesn't matter if you feel it or you don't feel it, you have that histamine release regardless. So it means that your biology is being disrupted on one level or another.
Right. Yeah. And for everyone who listens, you know, is listening to the summit, you'll hear Beth and I talk over and over about this. And in all of our other work, you know, those mast cells are really sentinels. They're protecting us. And that one of the issues is like, EMF is a negative stressor, right? And the problem with many of our stressors is we're getting more and more and more, and our mast cells are never getting time off. They're supposed to do one work. So they become dysregulated, and we have that ease of histamine release. And Nick, I think it's really interesting. We're talking about psychosomatic potentials and stuff. And even, you know, it goes into like, hey, this is the psychiatric realm. And in the study that you talk about, which is so key, the mast cells where they were measuring it was actually in this material called the dura mater, which is essentially the tough mother or the bag that protects the brain and the spinal cord. So this isn't in some soft cells. I mean, this is like literally in an area of your brain that's like a protector of you. And within the protector of you, we're letting these pro-inflammatory, you know, histamine out of the mast cells. And the one thing about some of those tissues that I think people should understand is that you're not going to see rapid removal of histamine like you might potentially have the opportunity to do in your blood. This is going to take a lot longer to get out of these thicker tissues, you know?
Gotcha.
So it's like, this is almost like an acute on chronic thing. You get that acute exposure and it builds up. Now, you know, like everything Nick's been talking about, you have the ability to heal from a lot of these things and minimize exposure and move forward. But it's just really interesting. Like, I think that like the one of the first, you know, as soon as like, you know, when I heard about the study, I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I'm like, where is it? And I'm like, oh my God, that's really a harder place to clean it up afterwards. So it's really important that we take simple, easy steps sort of earlier on to work on this. So that's really, you know, and it's Dr. Theo and the other folks who are doing all this. I'm just blown away. 20 years ago, we knew about this.
Well, they theorized it. That's the thing. And I mean, you know how scientists are, and Holly Owenson and his colleague, I don't recall his name exactly, so sorry for his colleague on that study, but they said, you know, it's a theoretical model based upon mast cell and histamine to explain the recently proclaimed sensitivity to electric and or magnetic fields in humans. That was around 20 years ago. And Holly Owenson is the one who did that scientific work to declare, to have the Swedish government declare that electrohypersensitivity is a functional impairment. So you can, in fact, make claims in Sweden. I don't know it happens that much because they're, even though the research is there and officially it's there, it's like the American Disability Act, the ADA recognizes also that functional impairment, but applying it and making a claim is another thing. So a lot of times you get to have good attorneys and a lot of money. So it's a bit, so that's just the reality is there's still a lot of disbelief, even though it's recognized in certain countries, for example. But that's the thing. They really wondered, why is it that people are getting itchy from their screen? There's a term that he coined, screen dermatitis. So it was a very bizarre term when he came up with it at the end of the 90s, beginning of 2000s. And yeah, one of his theory was, well, it's probably linked to mast cells. And now we have one of the top researchers in the field, what is it, 3 years ago, saying, yes, there's something there. We have to look at it. And when I was looking at mast cell activation syndrome, I saw that researchers, when they say, okay, well, what causes it? Part of it is triggered by environmental stressors. And that's really where it falls. Like it might be, right, I've never advocated, and maybe some people could blame me for that and say, oh, the EMF guy, it's not just about EMFs. No, it's not. But the problem I have when it comes to EMFs is a lot of people know that chemicals are bad. Like, okay, who needs to drink more pesticides or who needs to be exposed to more arsenic in their drinking water? No one. And we're starting to pick up on these things. A lot of people have saw Flint, Michigan happening and say, oh, I don't know if tap water is that safe anymore, right? And all these problems we're seeing in today's world, but a lot of people tend to overlook EMFs or completely disregard it. So that this is really why I keep this battle going is to say, guys, it needs to be put there, even though it's super inconvenient. Maybe you need to lower your exposure of EMFs and start thinking about these things, because if you're trying everything you can to calm down your body in that mast cell activation syndrome, but you're missing EMFs, this is a lot of functional medicine doctors tell me we're not getting the results that we want on certain protocols for whatever conditions, including mast cells activation syndrome. And when we tell people to lower EMFs, then we really see a difference. So for some individual, it just looks like it is a factor that is so important for them to consider on top of everything else. So I know it's a lot, but you just start with everything we talked about and you go from there. It doesn't have to be a thing where you change change everything all at once. It's just like improving your diet over time and improving your food sources and finding a farmer's market and saying, okay, now my apples are going to be organic and maybe next month is going to be something else. With EMFs, you got to take it gradually. And I know it's very uncomfortable at first for some people, changing their habits and turning off Wi-Fi. What the heck is this? And sometimes the family is not on board. And a lot of family members might be in disbelief. And that's part of the reason I wrote my book. But yeah, I want to be mindful or recognize and appreciate that for people listening to this, it might be a shock to them. And then try to make the bridge with the family or your spouse. Sometimes it will be difficult. So you just got to start by your own exposure and go from there and kind of introduce them slowly to the topic. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's interesting. The first time I really heard about the Wi-Fi stuff, I did not have any insomnia or anything like that, but we started turning off the Wi-Fi at night. And for 2 weeks, I slept terribly.
Yeah, you told me that a while back.
Yeah. And I feel like and then afterwards, I went back to normal sleep and it was great. But then a few weeks later, I was up one night. And a couple weeks later, maybe 3 weeks later, I'm like, I'm up one night. I'm like, what am I up for? And the third time it happened, like, you know, 3-4 months later, I'm like, why am I up? I'm like, not usually up. I forgot to turn the Wi-Fi off.
Mm.
And this is when we kind of like, you kind of got to go to the timer. But what was really interesting was my personal experience was I almost liken it to a EMF detoxification. My brain was so used to being stimulated at night that then when it wasn't there, it was like, wait, what's going on? And then afterwards, I got used to not having it. And so when it was on, I noticed it more. And then I went and started using it with patients. And I would see people within 1 or 2 days or maybe 2 or 3 weeks, their insomnia was like 50 to 90% better just by turning off the Wi-Fi at night. So it's not just, oh, well, maybe get a little less cancer. Your histamine might be a little lower. I mean, this is like, I'm not sleeping, I'm sleeping.
And so that's critical. One of the reasons I keep doing this work, Dr. Tom, is because of doctors, really, because let's face it, I can only spend so much time telling people to turn off their phone at night. Eventually, I'll get bored. However, the reality is, and then also, I always had this doubt in my mind, jumping into a topic that's controversial, writing my book, and then always with a little doubt, am I crazy or what? Is this a serious topic? Will it really make that much of a difference? And a lot of people told me, Nick, you know, you're saying all these things, but really, will it make a difference if I turn off my Wi-Fi at night? I see 100 Wi-Fis on my computer. But the proof is in the pudding. Now, if we go back to the real world and forget about the clinical research and the controversy and who's right and who's not, when you test it and it works, then it's okay, well, probably it had a big impact, right? If you do dietary changes, you change you change a few of your key habits. Maybe you start eating until 8 p.m. and not until 10 p.m., for example, just food timing at night, and you sleep much better and you realize, wow, it makes a big difference. So it means that for me, that food timing is key. But exactly, that's true. You and other people, the stories I heard from functional medicine doctors and a lot of them at the top of their field who told me, Nick, after we did that podcast, after we did the summit, or after we met in person at one of the events, I was a keynote speaker at, we just told patients to turn off the Wi-Fi at night. Not even the whole thing, not even all this entire discussion about all the intricacies, just Wi-Fi at night, and we saw a difference. So it really encouraged me because I said, my God, it's so simple. I don't have to sell a product, although, I mean, I sell courses and things like that, but it's almost too simple, right? You turn off a button and you sleep better. And you're like, okay, really? Really? Could it be possible? Well, for some people, they see that much of a difference. So imagine what could it do if you start removing multiple of these sources. And then some people see that, it improves my health tremendously. And I have to note that it's not only the people that are among the sickest that see a difference. I've had bodybuilders, professional athletes that say, you know, I'm at the top of my field. I feel very healthy. I have my clinical results. My blood is like, I'm a healthy person, a superhuman. And you know what? I started turning off my cell phone at night and the Wi-Fi, and I sleep even better than very good, you know? So a lot of people are looking for that extra edge. So why not, you know, why not try it? And that's really not a lot of people, I guess, those that don't want to try it are still in disbelief about the entire topic. And maybe they want to keep their head in the sand. No, don't let me know about EMF. All tinfoil, right? So,
well, it's funny because like there's two things. I have a little surprise for you, but before that,
okay.
I talk so much about brain detoxification and the glymphatic system.
Yeah.
And this is a system that we'll talk about at other talks in the summit more, but it's the system for detoxifying your brain primarily works when you're sleeping. But what's really interesting is that dura mater that got brought up in that study you brought up, you know, with the rats, where I want to clean out and re sort of purpose that histamine and get it back on track, bring down all the inflammatory cytokines you mentioned earlier, move those out of the dura mater. Well, there are lymphatic vessels and glymphatic drainage that happens in the dura mater, but again, primarily during sleep, everyone. So when we're saying, hey, turn off the, so if you're worried about what's going on with the phone exposure or the EMF from the, you know, during the day, at night, not only is turning off your Wi-Fi router going to help you sleep better,
yeah,
but that sleep is going to help you clean up from the other problems. So it's very synergistic and it's really like compound interest. A very little bit of doing a little bit of what Nick is talking about is the thing that's going to make a huge difference. And
that's
so
huge.
I thought it was one of the most hilarious things ever is like you're telling me about your book, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, right? And so I, one of the things at the Health Entrepreneurs Group where we met, every year they're like, hey, does anybody want to do a submission for the best internet haters, right? So our whole thing is like, if we're out there saying something that we really truly believe in, we're passionate, it's backed by science,
yeah,
someone's going to disagree with us because it's not going to go with their thing. So I did, there was an article written about me and they had a guy. And so I went and I redid it in a video. And so I pulled this up for you. I'm just going to show you a clip from it. It's literally just a still clip, but so I got called out for talking crazy stuff.
Oh,
and so I pulled
out
my Wi-Fi router and made a tinfoil hat. And it was like, the next thing I know, Nick's telling me about his non-tinfoil guide to EMS. And I'm like, I was crying.
But that's hilarious. It's
like, there's real science behind this, guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, so Nick, as we kind of bring, we land people, I mean, we're really clear on the, I mean, the negative health impacts are potentially high, but it's around us. We've talked about wiring our phone. We've talked about turning off our Wi-Fi at night. In fact, stop turning it off, put it on a timer, go over to Nick's website, grab a timer and just, or, you know, whatever timer you have, I mean, get it, set it and forget it. What are there a couple of other things that people could potentially, who are listening, start to do now, before, you know, as they're waiting for your book to show up, as they're waiting to jump into a course, like what can they do to actually help themselves? Like, you know,
You know, just moving a nightstand, that little table next to your bed. Well, often people have two, right? Even if you're alone, it's like the symmetrical design. And sorry, if it cuts off and I disappear, is because there's a storm going on in here in Barcelona. So just a small side note, I hope I don't disappear. But quickly, the nightstand should not be the place where you have all sorts of electronics. Some people charge multiple devices there. So not only can the devices emit that wireless radiation, but also the fact that they're charging, they literally have a field around them, a magnetic field and an electrical field. These are other types of EMFs that can also impact sleep negatively. But the good news about these is that they're pretty much local to the device. So if you, let's say if you have an arm's length from different devices, you're fine from your pillow. So just get them, go on your bed tonight and just try, can I touch anything? Yeah, two arm's lengths, exactly. Just wave them around and can I touch anything? And if you can touch a lamp, an alarm clock, and then you have multiple things on there, some people have more than one phone, just get them away as much as possible. I prefer battery-powered alarm clocks, for example, that have fewer of these problems. But just a general note that in your bedroom, you should not have all these devices like charging at night and all these kind of things. I see people have their laptop in a corner and they charge the iPad, but they forgot to put in on airplane mode. Then they have the Kindle Fire, same problem. So sometimes they have seven devices and they don't even think about it. So just get those out of the bedroom. Just like you want to have the right lighting and the right pillow and the right mattress, get those things outside the bedroom, because these are sleep, like they're stressors, they're sleep deprivation devices, pretty much. Even some of the sleep trackers unfortunately lead to sleep problems, but that's a whole can of worms. But I'm not a big fan of people who use a lot of Bluetooth devices at night either, for that very reason. And it's a bit tricky because some people use continuous glucose monitoring, some people use, you know, there are certain things that are medical in their nature and that might help you. So in that case, you got to take a personal decision about risk versus benefit. But generally speaking, if you are to use like sleep tracking, I'd rather have you use a phone on airplane mode and then maybe an app that can work while on airplane mode, or something like an Oura Ring. That's a, let's say, smart ring, but it can be put on airplane mode at night. So it means that it will not ping Bluetooth. Sometimes I sleep like this. I mean, the Bluetooth would be right next to my face, literally. So it's not a good choice. So this is really what I would say for the bedroom, because again, I agree with you 110% that doctors tell me that, and EMF mitigation specialists, those engineers that come to your home and take readings and help you do these changes a little bit more in depth than just what you can do by yourself, they agree that nighttime is really where most of the impact is happening. So if you had to focus, do I worry about daytime of anything, cell phone, Wi-Fi, or nighttime? It will be nighttime. So if you really take anything out of that conversation, it would be to just do these steps in the bedroom and start there. Like, you should not worry. A lot of people, they worry, okay, well, you know, my toaster has a Bluetooth signal coming out of it. And I'm like, okay, well, let's forget about the toaster. What's in your bedroom, right? Kind of redirecting their attention to what actually matters. But a lot of people, I'm not saying that this is a stupid question, far from it. It's just that it is overwhelming. You see those Bluetooth things everywhere. And the question is, okay, well, is it near a place where you spend multiple hours during the day? Even if it's I have this thing, it's Bluetooth in my garage. Well, are you in the garage for hours and hours on end? And the answer sometimes is no. Okay, well, you know, leave it there for the moment. Focus on where's your favorite sofa? Where's your favorite place at the kitchen table? Where's your home office? And where's your pillow? Like, these are the places where you spend multiple hours, and what's around, right? So just focus on time of exposure, because again, these rats were exposed 1 hour per day for 45 days, right? So think about like all these hours that you can decrease exposure will really matter in the end, right? Cumulative exposure. So that's really what I would leave people with, is just try one step. Start with the Wi-Fi at night, or turn off the cell phone, get it outside the bedroom, and just go from there. Like, start with one thing. And if you find that for yourself or for your spouse or for your kids, you guys sleep better, it's going to be much more easier to convince them to take additional steps if they feel it themselves and feel the difference.
Absolutely. So well said. And I think the part I love about all this is there's so much hope here. It's not like a death sentence. It's like you can make simple changes at night that are going to make potentially profound changes in your health. And so that's really awesome. Nick, thanks so much for joining us, man. This is like such an amazing topic. It looks like there's some lightning out there too. Huh?
there is. Yeah. It's just getting so weird here. I mean, we started the interview, it was just sunny, and now it's the first time we have rain in days. So I cannot complain. It's very, very hot here, but yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I hope that everyone got a lot of value out of this.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I mean, it's just it's such an important topic, and a place where we can improve our health by doing such simple things that will bring down inflammation, decrease mast cell activation, and, you know, and our let our mast cells kind of like re-regulate a little bit more. So, you know, I wanted to give you an opportunity to remind people where they can find you, and also, remember you were saying that you're going to share with us a bonus for everybody who's listening. So I'd love to just give us a quickie about that.
Sure. So the main website is theemfguy.com. There's my book on there. There's my course, Electropollution Fix, that helps you apply what you learn in the book. It's really the practical application, what to do room by room inside your home, basically. That's really what I focused on in the last few years. I have practitioner training also, which you're aware of, Electrosmog RX. That's a little bit more dated, but it's still very, very relevant. And so all of this is on my website. And the bonus for everyone listening to this, there's a report I wrote that's called 5G in 5 minutes. A lot of people ask about 5G. Okay, well, that's all good, Wi-Fi. And what about 5G? Well, I want to know about 5G because it's so controversial. That's a buzzword, a keyword on the internet that you hear a lot. And the reality is, well, 5G is quite simple to understand. Once you read this report, you're going to read it in 5 minutes. It's just a few pages, and you'll learn what 5G is, what might be the health effects, and how it differs from previous technologies. And should you really worry about it, or how much of a risk does it represent compared to your phone and previous Gs out there and the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth stuff as well?
Awesome. Thanks so much, everybody. Nick, the EMF guy, Pino, and Nick, thank you so much again for being here with us. And I'm Dr. Tom Moorcroft. I appreciate you joining us for this episode of the Reversing Mast Cell Activation Syndrome and Histamine Intolerance Summit. And until next time, we'll see you then.